greatest couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Tim Buell, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. That's not Neil at all. I got rid of Neil. I said, yep, I'm Neil's done gone. With you. Done with you, sucka. So I went over and opened up my golden briefcase.
Oh.
And let's brought out there. Tim Buell.
Yes.
Who's the co-host of Golden Briefcase. Say hi to the audience.
Hello, guys. How's everyone doing? And you can't respond because it's a podcast, but it's a rhetorical how you doing. So I hope everyone's well. Yes.
Yes, yes. And tell us a little bit about Golden Briefcase, just so if there's listeners out there who don't know about the Golden Briefcase, tell us about what it is, where we can find you, and all that good stuff.
Sure, yeah. Golden Briefcase is the podcast I do with Jeremy Kirk. He writes for Film School Rejects, as well as FirstShowing.net, where the podcast is hosted. And this is a show we started doing, I think we're on our 25th week of doing it now. So yeah, it's been a little while. And we got the idea from, of course, the Golden Briefcase from Pulp Fiction, one of our favorite films. And we kind of like the whole metaphorical thing of, you know, you open up the briefcase and we never know what's inside. And so we kind of wanted to continue that with our podcast. You listen to every episode, you never know what you're going to get. So it was just kind of a fun little movie pun there. But yeah, we broadcast live every Tuesday night, sometime between 6 and 8 Pacific time. So yeah, it's a running joke with us on the show. We never know what time we're live. So you just kind of got to follow us on Twitter or find out when we're broadcasting. But the shows usually go up on iTunes and on First Showing every Wednesday, sometime in the afternoon, though. So
okay. And where can they find you on Twitter?
You find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Tim Buell. It's T-I-M-B-U-E-L.
And then Golden Briefcase, you can just follow you.
Yeah, you can follow me. But yeah, the show's got its own Twitter. It's just Twitter/Golden Briefcase. So find it there.
And then, of course, obviously, this is Fat Guys at the Movies. You can catch us on all of our shenanigans at fatguysatthemovies.com. You can download us at iTunes and just search Fat Guys at the Movies, and, you know, me and Neil will pop right up. And then you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 614-388-8735, but Neil's not going to be with us for a couple weeks. So that's actually not a good number to call and tell us nasty things. If you want to call and tell us nasty things and have us read it on the next, play it on the next show, it's 740-205-6456. So that's where we can go. But yeah, no, I've been on the Golden Briefcase a couple times, three times, I think.
Yeah, a few times, technically, yeah.
Yeah, literally a few times. And it was a lot of fun. We don't have as fancy of special effects here.
You don't have little jingles and stuff like that, yeah.
No, we don't have Gerard Butler.
Yeah, you don't have your own Gerard Butler, yeah.
We have the same music for our breaks that we've been using for the last 2 or 3 years because I am that lazy.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that, man. It's familiarity. People like that sometimes, though, so
exactly.
It's good.
It's like the opening of Friends. You never want them to change that, even if the hairstyle's changed. we're going to talk about it's August, so there's nothing good in the theaters. But that's not going to stop us from talking about the movies. Tim, have you actually had a chance to see any of the films that we're going to be talking about this week?
I have not, actually.
Oh, my gosh. What was that? Did we just get invaded by aliens?
Yeah, I think that was another thing. No, that was something on my end. Apologize for that.
Oh, wow.
What was the question one more time?
You're sterile now, and you've lost your short-term memory.
I have been zapped. Anyway, sir, what were you saying? I apologize. Totally got interrupted there.
No, that's cool. What have you seen any of the movies this week?
Any of these new releases that are coming out, or
any movies ever? I'm sure you've seen films before.
I think I've seen a few of those. These strange things. Let's see. Just anything I've watched this past week in general. Any film?
Well, the movies that we're going to be talking about.
Oh, okay, gotcha. This weekend, what do we have? We got Takers coming out, and then we got Last Exorcism. So no, I have not gotten a chance to see them yet. I missed a screening for Takers, which I've heard is a good thing, but not
well,
sure.
Well, for my review, I think they're going to actually use my Twitter pull quote on the poster.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do. Since you mentioned Takers, let's do Takers first.
Sure.
This one, Matt Dillon stars in another heist movie with powerhouse actors like Hayden Christensen and Paul Walker. Oh, and Zoe Saldana's in it, and she's trying not to get beaten by Chris Brown.
I'm here to discuss the future. A once-in-a-lifetime job. 25-30 mil. My plan, your command.
Why should we trust you?
Life's looking pretty good from right here.
It's a lot of money, Jake, and that's what we're here for.
All right, fellas, can we do it in 3 days?
What's to stop us? Don't play when it comes to money.
That's a no-brainer.
Our biggest heist yet, and you don't seem too jazzed.
Something ain't right. I don't trust you. You owe me.
I want what's mine.
There you go.
Yeah. So, are you at all interested in seeing this movie?
You know, I'm not too interested in seeing it. It's something I remember seeing advertised a few months back in the theater, and I just wasn't too interested in it whatsoever. I saw the poster. Really not a huge fan of Hayden Christensen whatsoever, and he's just has not been someone I really appreciate the acting ability of ever since those great films known as the Star Wars prequels. So, yeah, you know, and Jeremy, my co-host on Golden Briefcase, was just telling me his dread that he had to go see this film and provide a review for it. And so that for me was enough to be like, okay, I'm not necessarily interested in this. So no.
What's funny is it reminded me so much of Armored when I saw the trailer. Did you actually see Armored? Because I'm like Matt Dillon in another heist movie.
I saw the first half of Armored. I actually did like it quite a bit, so I do need to finish it at some point.
Yeah, I'm interested to see I did not like this movie, and part of it is there's a trend in cinematography is to do that shaky cam thing.
Yes,
and it's gone kind of over the board with Paul Greengrass. If you watched like Green Zone, and they're like in a press conference, and the camera's moving around, and you're like, it's a freaking press conference. What are you trying to avoid here? I mean, I understand if you're being shot at, but
sure.
And this one, it does it. It has the thing where it's like, you know, you can't focus on anything. There's this big long chase scene near the end of it, and you have no idea what's happening. Watch, and I was sitting way back. I wasn't even on the in the close row. So the cinematography is overdone. It rips off scene. It has an absolute rip off of a scene from True Romance. I mean, in a hotel room, guns blazing, and I was just like, I mean, shots taken right out of True Romance, beyond an homage to True Romance. It was just a blatant ripoff of that scene.
Really?
And it just, you know, part of it is that there's no good guys. There's no one you can even get behind, but not in a good way. Like, you know, something like Pulp Fiction. Tarantino, there's a lovability, not just a likability, but a lovability with Jules and Vincent and all the characters. And you kind of want to see, even though they're awful people, you want to see them succeed. But this one, just nobody you could actually connect with. And they have stupid things that happen. Like the opening heist, their big catch of how to escape, I'm giving it away, but I don't care, is they hijack a news helicopter. And I'm like, wow, you planned a heist for like months and you're just hoping this news helicopter lands on the building? That's Jeez. Your escape plan? And that's the level of logic that goes into this film.
Well, I think that's a lot of problems with some of these heist films. I mean, you do have a few clever ones like the Ocean series and every once in a while. I don't know about you, but when I watch a heist film, I like seeing like extremely clever execution and then, you know, just intricate planning in terms of these, like, you know, get in, get out elements. And yeah, if you don't have that in a heist film, that for me kind of loses the mastery that some of these thieves or whatever you want to call them, these like heistmen, actually have. And that just kind of sucks. And so it's like, okay, so yeah, you spent all this time with all these clever, you know, disguises or, you know, get in plans. But yeah, if you don't have escape, that's just kind of silly at that point. You're like, was it a suicide mission? What are you trying to do? But I don't know. When I watch a heist film, that's what I look for is the intricate planning and then the execution by those people that are doing the heist.
Yeah, I was not impressed. I did not like it. And it looks like it's going to pick up at one point and then it just just utterly falls apart.
Ah, jeez.
And it was awful. The audience loved it and it's probably going to make tons of money this weekend. But for me, my fat guy's grade is, Taker sucks.
Yeah.
So
I can't say I'm too surprised, though. That's, again, to reiterate what I was saying. Yeah, I literally had no expectations for this. Hence my reason for skipping any screening opportunity I had. So, yeah.
We got to go to a break.
Hey, welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies, and we were just talking about two of these other new films that are coming out this weekend. What do we got coming out, Kevin?
Well, we've got actually two other new ones. Well, one's not a new film, one's an old film.
True. Yeah.
We haven't seen any of these. And like I said, this is our shtick for Fat Guys. We don't see movies. We tell you what we think of them without seeing them, especially when they don't screen them. And that's really the problem. I will try my darndest to go see any movie that they're going to screen and we're going to talk about. But these two, they did not screen. I've obviously seen most of one of them, which is coming up, and that is Avatar, the Big Blue Sex Scene Edition. We don't have a trailer, but this one, James Cameron adds 9 minutes to his global blockbuster and re-releases it in theaters. Ka-ching.
Exactly.
Here's my problem is it made $2.7 billion worldwide. Mm-hmm. And I had read a quote from Cameron where he says, well, people are saying they want to get it out in theaters and people didn't have a chance to see it in theaters. I'm like, how could you? Everybody saw it in theaters. It made $2.7 billion.
No, that's so true. It's literally, to this day, still, it's the made the most money, right, in terms of box office gross?
The most money. And not by a small margin.
It's tons. It just surpassed, what was it, The Dark Knight was the only other one that it surpassed?
No.
Titanic yes, still,
was the highest, and it beat Titanic. Let's put it this way. The international gross alone for Avatar beat Titanic's worldwide gross.
Jeez.
Now, by ticket sales, I don't think it's somewhere in like the 10. It's like ranked 10 or 15 in ticket sales because IMAX prices, 3D prices, 2009, yeah. 2010 prices. So ticket sales is still, I mean, Gone with the Wind still wins in ticket sales.
I think so, yeah.
But yeah, who didn't? I mean, here's my thing is if you didn't see Avatar in the theaters, you shouldn't get another chance. I mean, it was out for like, it was on top 10. It was number one for like 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If you had your chance. So he's doing, this is just such a money grab, but do we need another money grab for this movie? I mean, it's made plenty of money.
It's kind of just like literally beating, and I mean physically beating, any other film that ever wants to obtain similar glory. You know, it's just like, well, that's the thing. And this is what's bad, though, is, you know, people are going to go see it. They're going to flock. Oh, Avatar's back. Oh, and there's new footage. And they're just going to race to the theater to see it. I certainly won't. I liked Avatar. I did not love it by any stretch of the word. And I will not be seeing this again in theaters because, frankly, I heard also this week that they said that there was going to be 16 minutes added to the re-release of the DVD and Blu-ray. I might check out, because that's, for me, I loved, you know, like, anytime there's a re-release with extra footage, I'm at least curious to check it out. Probably most notably the Lord of the Rings, where you got sometimes up to 50 minutes of new footage, and that's just rad.
You get like 30 weeks of Lord of the Rings movies, like the 18-day director's cut.
Exactly. See, at that point, you're like, it's a new film. At this one, I'm like, 9 minutes? Yeah. And that's the thing, too. A lot of people misconstrue what this means. They think it's 9 minutes, like an extra 9 minute sequence. No, they mean 9 minutes total. Like, there's little bits here and there and here and there, and then it's added in. Are the audiences who saw it the first time, do you really think they're going to recognize that? Are they going to be like, oh, that wasn't there last time? Oh,
well, wow. Here's the other thing is any re-release is going to have a good 30 to 40 seconds of more credits for the re-release credits.
Yeah.
At the end, because they always, so like 10% of that is credits that's being added to the movie. So I did like Avatar. It made my top 10 list because of what it did bringing back the theatrical experience. But this one is just such a money grab. Now, if they had added a half hour of footage and had extra scenes in there and that sort of thing, maybe, but really just 9 minutes is just, it's
very negligible. I think it's hardly worth even mentioning. Like they could say we're re-releasing Avatar and I would probably feel the exact same way. I don't even care about the new footage, you know?
Yeah. It reminds me of when you get a DVD and it's like the extended edition and you watch it and you'd be like, yeah, I don't notice any difference.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm just saying it sucks because it's more than a buck a minute to go see this movie in IMAX 3D.
Yeah.
So if you didn't have your chance to see it, it's on freaking Blu-ray now. Go get it on Blu-ray and watch it. And then get the new Blu-ray in, what, November when they come out with it.
Yeah, I think the real reason a lot of people are still wanting a little bit of Avatar, and this is maybe where I'm coming from as well, the Blu-ray release had like no extras on it, and this is one of the like most innovative films in terms of technology and you know, like motion capture and whatnot, and they literally are still, they got that knowledge locked up in a vault somewhere on like a bunch of Blu-ray masters, and they're not showing anyone until it's time. So I, for that reason, if there is that sort of material included on this next Blu-ray release, that's something I'll definitely be checking out because that's what I'm interested in.
That whole thing irritated me because I even read somewhere where Cameron was like, we don't have anything on. And he was like bragging about, we don't have anything. We don't have you don't even have to sit through a trailer to watch this. And I'm like,
ugh.
What? Like that's a chore? Why don't you just say, we don't have the FBI warning that's going to have to force you to watch for 10 seconds. No, he's like, oh, we don't have the trailer. That's like, I once worked in an office when they're like, yeah, we're changing your health insurance and you're going to cut this benefit. It's going to cost you more money. But it's really a good thing. I'm like, no, don't. You know, don't put lipstick on a pig and call it honey. It's not going to steal a pig, you know?
He thinks, he's like, well, I'm James Cameron. They'll listen to me and they'll understand. It's like, nah, buddy, not going to cut it. Come on.
I mean, I love his films. I love, but he's, yep, he's an arrogant here. SOB. I mean, oh, like he when is. He was like, oh, I give you permission, Catherine Bigelow, to win the Oscar.
Ugh, I know. Seriously. It's like, okay. Fine.
Anyway, so I'm saying sucks on this one. Don't even bother. Don't give the money when... And he can, it's, yeah, anyways.
Yep. Agreed.
The next movie is The Last Exorcism, mm-hmm. in which a man of faith whose faith is being challenged decides to help a young girl who's been possessed by the devil. Wait, this sounds really familiar.
Very much so.
Exorcism is alive and well. The Bible is filled with demons. If you believe in God, you have to believe in the devil.
Mr. Spitzer, how you doing? Cotton Marcus.
My wife died 2 years ago. It's quite a shock for Nell.
Were you very close?
She was my best friend.
Somehow, the devil got in her.
Nell, can you hear me?
Yeah. It's coming through my skin. Please help. Get it out of my...
Did you get a chance to see this at all?
I have not, but you know what? I'm pretty excited. On the Golden Briefcase the other night, we had Massaworm from Ain't It Cool News on the show, and he has seen the film, and he had some very good things to say about it. He said it's a very refreshing look at something very familiar, like you just said, and that's something I'm very interested in seeing. I'm always down to see something familiar as long as there's been a clever twist or a brilliant directing job or something like that. And this new guy, Daniel Stamm, who's directing this film, is supposed to be pretty darn good. So that's personally, I'm pretty stoked to see this. But
what else has he done? Has he done anything else of note?
He's done two other, I think they're indie films. I had them both pulled up a few moments ago, but nothing that's wide released to be sure. So.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to have to check it out at midnight. By the time this hits the grand airwaves, I will have seen it. So you can check Fat Guys in the Movies for, at the very least, my audio review. But yeah, I mean, the trailers look intriguing. Like I said, I mean, sort of like the girl possessed. I mean, we had that. What was the one that Jennifer Carpenter is with the exorcism of Emily Rose?
Emily Rose, yeah.
Yeah, yes, which I didn't like. I thought the exorcism parts of that were okay.
Yeah. I liked a lot of parts of that movie. In the end, it didn't sell me 100%, but I did like that one. Kind of had a really cool sort of courtroom drama going on in the midst of this spiritual warfare and stuff. And real quick, just to what we were saying, Daniel Stamm's directed two shorts. One was Off Hollywood and Vine from 2004, and then the other one is A Necessary Death, which came out, I believe, inside, 2008. And that one actually is a feature, my bad. So it's 101 minutes, but it's... These are all in Germany, and the other one was in Serbia, it looks like. So, yeah. Ooh. Definitely not an American
one of those films. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, me neither.
But no, yeah, I am looking forward to it. I do tend to... exorcism films, like I said, the Emily Rose was okay. I did not like the courtroom drama of that one, but I thought the exorcism parts were okay. But the Exorcist movies, the first one was any good. The other ones, well, Exorcist 3 was okay.
Yeah.
But like that last one by Rennie Harlan, even though I dearly love Rennie Harlan's stuff, it was awful.
I skipped it. I didn't even care to see it.
I was like, meh. Yeah. But yeah, it's I'm curious to see if he does something better. The whole found footage thing can sometimes get overused.
Sure.
Especially with wide releases. They sometimes play better on video, but we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've seen some I thought Paranormal Activity was very innovative and although this looks very different.
I'd say it definitely looks more professional. Paranormal Activity really did. And you know, to their credit, it was literally shot on a no budget with, you know, basic sort of prosumer cameras. So they got that real authentic feel. And this one definitely looks a little bit more, you know, professionally, you know, produced. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm thinking I have to give it on principle. I have to give it a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us, but I am looking forward to it. So make of that what you will.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are the infamous third middle segment in which we are not on the air in Wyoming.
So it's okay to just go and just ramble. I like
that's
this.
Right.
It's,
we can
it's
talk
free form. I like it.
That's right. We can make fart noises and everything, and no one's going to get offended. Because that's how we have fun here on Fat Guys at the Movies. We're so informal. I'm exhausted right now. Just to let everybody know, I am not at the, I'm not on my A game. I apologize to Tim.
Hey man, it's good.
Normally, I bring my A game to Neil because it's more fun to make fun of him.
Well, I should feel honored then. At least I'm not too make funnable, if you know what I mean. So
that's good. Right. Well, you've seen. Let's just put it this way: you've seen as many movies as Neil did last week.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Which is zero. Hey, you know what? You asked it earlier in the show, and I think I'll give you a chance to weigh in on this, since really it's August and it's just crap titles right now. You know what have you seen lately that you like?
Well, in theaters, the only film I've actually really wanted to pay to see, and I didn't because I got to go, fortunately, to a screening of it, is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And I think there's just so much buzz around this film. There's little that can be said that hasn't been said already. But if you haven't seen this film and you're not sure what to go see this weekend, or, you know, even, it's going to be in theaters probably for a little longer. Go see Scott Pilgrim, man.
By that, you mean like three or four more days.
Maybe three or four more days. By the time you're hearing this, it's probably gone. But I had a lot of choices this past week. I still have yet to see Expendables, which I actually was pretty excited about. And Jeremy and myself on Golden Briefcase did a fun sort of 80s action film episode in preparation for it. And I remember he texted me that weekend. It was like, Expendables wasn't awful, but there was a serious lack of awesome, which I instantly was like, do I want to go out and take my girlfriend and spend $40 at the movie? No, I would rather go probably give the money to Scott Pilgrim and go see that again, because that just, it's a true joy. You know, I'm a big, you know, geek, obviously. I do movie podcasts, so it literally preaches to our sort of crowd, those who love games and movies and just pop culture. And it was just, I don't know, it's a true joy. Definitely one of the best films I've seen in a while.
Wow. Well, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah, I wasn't wild about Scott Pilgrim, but that's maybe because I'm too old.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, you're a geezer, man. It's not gonna hit you in the spot. It's not gonna tickle your fancy. No, I kid, of course.
That's all right.
Yeah.
That's
right. Now, did you see The Expendables by chance?
I did. I actually took my wife to see it. This was the story that how this went is we were eating dinner one day at a restaurant, and my wife looks up to me and she goes, "You know, what movie I want to see? I want to see The Expendables." And I look
you're
over,
like,
and I'm like, I love you.
Exactly. That's the moment to say it. Jeez.
Yeah. And so I took her to go see The Expendables at midnight, and it was fun. I mean, it was maybe a little more gritty than they could have gone. I mean, they have funniness to it. They have humor to it, sort of like Jason Statham and Sylvester Stallone sort of riffing off each other. But mm-hmm. It was fun. If you like those 80s action movies, you know, you should like it.
Well, let me ask you this. There was something that me and Jeremy were, or Jeremy and myself, sorry, poor English there.
Shame on you. Yeah, you're done on the show. Goodbye.
Yeah. No, we were a little concerned about it. I loved Rambo, with, you know, the newest Rambo film that Stallone made three or four years ago, whenever that was. And loved the heck out of it. I thought it was
Two years ago.
Thank you. 2 years ago. Yeah. Yeah, it was just such a blast. And we were both just saying, you know what? I think if the film is done in the very similar spirit that movie was, where you don't care that much about the story, you just want to see Rambo kill some dudes, and boy, does he. Then The Expendables should be good. And then when Jeremy and I talked about it, he's like, yeah, there was a lot of missing from that. But at the same time, you could go into the movie as a popcorn flick and really have a good time with it, which I still am planning to do it. I might wait till it hits one of our discount theaters here in town. But wasn't on my must-see list this past weekend for sure.
It's way more lighthearted than Rambo. I mean, Rambo was, you know, a hardcore story. So.
Definitely.
You know, I mean, it went into ugly places, and this one goes into ugly places, but it laughs about them too. So, you know, it's funny that this whole week, the whole last couple, well, the whole summer has been bad. It was funny. I just got interviewed by CNN.com, mm-hmm. which should be live by the time you hear this. You get a little plug for Film School Rejects in there.
Nice.
And she was asking me about Taken. The writer was asking me about Takers. Not Taken. Takers.
It's the second time you've done that. I was like, I like Taken. Don't talk trash.
Taken was so much better. We were talking about, you know, she was saying, is it undermarketed? Is it because of Chris Brown? And I'm like, I don't know, because Chris Brown is a bit of a controversy. And
sure.
You know, it's part of it is it's such a crowded movie. There's so many stars in it that nobody really gets a spotlight. Maybe Idris Elba. I don't know if that's how you say his name.
I think so. Yeah.
It may be him, and then Matt Dillon are sort of like the main stars. But I'm wondering if they cut some stuff out with Chris Brown in that. I don't even know why I got on this. Like I said, I'm exhausted and I'm rambling here. but let's talk about the box office from this last week.
Sure.
The Expendables won again with a powerhouse $16.9 million. Jeez. That's what won the weekend, folks.
Exactly. Wow. That just shows.
Yeah, but you had five movies opening new, and you know, hey, you know what? This actually is kind of impressive. All five got in the top 10.
Yeah, that's true.
Vampire Suck came in second with $12 million. These are like 1989 numbers.
Exactly. This is like when no one had money to do anything, and so they're like, oh, look at how much money that film made.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, it's like, oh, this James Bond movie cost $7 million, and it made 30, and you're just like, what?
Yeah. Vampire Suck, by the way, I'll say 5% on Rotten Tomatoes. So those of you who are listening and saw that, what, huh?
It's not that bad.
Really?
Yeah. Well, this is how I phrased it to Neil last week. They took five movies to get to the pinnacle of, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
I mean, it's not fantastic, but I think what I liked the most about it was just how well the girl in it nails Kristen Stewart's awful acting. Yeah.
I think I could definitely see that. Yeah. I mean, well, do you remember that SNL skit that they did with, and Taylor Swift was playing her? Did you ever see that one? They did this bit where, which you should, it's not that good, but basically, like, it was just one of their little digital shorts, and they were kind of playing on the whole, you know, those are the Cullens and stuff like that from Twilight, and they had, it was, Bill Hader and company as the Franks, and they were the Frankenstein monsters.
I did see that on YouTube.
I thought that was genius, and so if it's anything like that, you know what, I definitely will give it a shot, because I, like many other filmgoers, I understand this whole Twilight phenomenon and whatnot, but I'm just sick of it. That's all, you know, sick of it.
Well, it's too much. Well, I had an encounter with a Twilight fan in the weirdest way. I was out school supply shopping for my kids earlier this week, and it was like 4 a.m. I went to Walmart, because I don't go to Walmart during normal hours because they're just way too weird people there. I wait to go and like, you know, so there's fewer people, and they're all still weird, but, you know, there's just fewer of them.
Exactly.
And I was getting school supplies, and there was this mother, and it was Monday morning. I mean, it was like 4 a.m. on Monday morning. And my kids were going to school, like, in 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I'm grabbing the last-minute things. And there's this woman in there with her 12, 13-year-old girl. And I'm here thinking, going, who was shopping at? I understand shopping in the middle of the night, but with the kid that's going to be going to school in a couple hours? This is just silly. And the girl, she's dirty. I mean, she's exactly what you'd expect from a People of Walmart shop. I'm so mean. But, I mean, she's like filthy. She's just a filthy person. I mean, she's dirty, and she's unattractive. She looks at it, and she's digging through these Twilight posters. She finds one. She's like, but, Mom, can we buy this? It's a Jacob poster for $5.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is why it's made $10 billion.
Yeah, it's true. It's, I mean, like, that's the thing. We had a really good discussion on my show regarding Twilight. We actually had a girl guest. It was Charlotte Cook from the Frontline Club. And she's one of our British friends from overseas, you know, and she was talking to us about this whole Twilight thing. And she came right out and said, I love the material. Or rather, she hasn't read the books, but she loves the story of the movies. And she knows it's bad, and she knows it's laughable, but she just likes it. And then, actually, on our show last night when we had Massive War, for Made It Cool, he said, think of it this way, the Twilight thing is to girls as Hackers is to guys. You know it's a bad movie, but you really love it. And I was like, you know what, that's a profound comparison. Yeah, because you could talk to almost every guy who's seen that movie, and they'll be like, oh, I love Hackers, you know, and they know it's bad though. But, and I was like, that's a very profound statement, sir. I agree. So it's one of those things. But I don't know, when I see something like Vampire Sucks and I know it's from epic movie and date movie and all those people, I roll my eyes, but you know what? I'll give it a shot. I respect your opinion, Kevin, so I might check it out and see what's going on with it.
And then you'll like send me a flame. You'll be like, what the hell?
Thanks for wasting 90 minutes exactly of my life.
I'll just get an email. It'll be like, what the hell? And I'll be like, oh, you must have watched Vampire Suck.
Must have watched it.
But Piranha 3 did not do well.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It did $10 million. Oddly enough, striking a sequel.
Yeah.
That's news came out.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Why do you think it didn't do as well? I have my own opinions, but why do you think it didn't do as well?
Well, I might be a little off on this because I unfortunately still have not gotten to see the film, but I do have many close friends that saw it and loved it. I think that a lot of people are going to miss it. Now, I think a real testament to that is you see what the critics gave it on Rotten Tomatoes. It's currently sitting at a comfortable 81%, yeah. Which if you ask an average film goer, they would have probably expected Vampire Sucks to do better than that. And yeah. My personal opinion is it's for a niche crowd. It's for people like us who appreciate the sort of Roger Corman style creature features that are literally just for gore and sex and nudity and all that stuff, which is awesome. And you know, if you're a film goer and you love movies, then that's probably something that's going to touch your heart a little bit in terms of nostalgia or maybe just guilty pleasure. And you're going to go see that film. Average American moviegoer, probably not their thing. Some curious teens and parents maybe went and snuck out and saw it at, you know, the opening weekend, and that was it. And now it's just going to disappear, which is why I think it's hilarious. It got a sequel greenlit pretty much at this point. And I was like, well, that's cool. At least, you know, the right people saw the film, and that's, you know, maybe people of our sort of crowd here, like film critics and whatnot. But I think the average American moviegoer is not really going to find this on a repeat viewing, something they're going to go spend their money on. I don't know. That's my feedback.
What's funny is I went and saw it at midnight, and the crowd at that compared to the crowd at the Expendables was very small compared to the one that, because I saw the Expendables a week before.
Yeah.
And so you're right. I just don't think it just didn't bring in an audience. And I think there's a couple of reasons. First of all, as fun of a movie as it was, there's nothing to really draw an audience out with that. There's no like stars to it that people would be like, oh, he's in the movie, or she's in the movie, so I'm going to go see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're recognizable names: Elizabeth Shue, Ving Rhames, Jerry O'Connell. You know, Christopher Lloyd's in it, but it's nobody that it's not like you're like it's not even like having like Jack Black in it or something like that, where it's like, oh yeah, that's like a name that people be like, I just want to see what he does. I mean, who's seen movies because Elizabeth Shue's in them?
Right,
Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah, I'm in this movie. Yeah.
But let's go see it, everybody. Yeah. Come on.
Well, I think you just hit it right on the head there. You have a lot of these characters, a lot of which are direct references to these other films that this film is a reference to. You got, you know, Christopher Lloyd, obviously, sort of playing almost the Richard Dreyfuss type character. Wait, Richard Dreyfuss is in it too, is he not?
Richard Dreyfuss is opens it. He's in the boat and he's singing the song from Jaws.
Yeah, exactly. He's so it's literally just
go home.
Yeah, it's a little nod and a hat tip to those people like us that love that sort of movie. You go ask any other moviegoer, they're going to say like, well, who was that dumb old guy in the boat at the beginning? They're not going to remember that, or certainly they're not going to draw the. Even though to us it's blatantly obvious, this is a Jaws film, or this is this and this. They're not going to understand that, and I think that's where the film's going to fall short.
Yeah, it was funny because he literally opens. He's the first shot of the opening of the movie. He's in that fishing boat. And he's singing the song. I laughed out loud. I was the only one in the theater who laughed. No one else got that. And it's a brilliant little nod to Jaws, but you're right. No one else is going to get it. You know, your average college student who maybe has seen Jaws at a party or at a swimming pool event or something like that, or watched it once on cable. But you're right. It is for the moviegoer. Also, you know, people would think, well, you know, when they remade Halloween a couple of years ago, in like 2007, mm-hmm. it did great in August. And I'm like, well, but the difference between that is that's Halloween, which had a whole franchise and a Michael Myers, it had Rob Zombie behind it. And so there was a whole bunch of stuff that would actually draw an existing fan base. Alexander Aja does not have an existing fan base.
Nope.
And none of the names. And Piranha, people would be like, there's a lot of people who don't remember Piranha. I mean, that came out in 1978?
78, I want to say. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. So
well, even my own parents, who are considerably older than me too, it's, you know, they're not like young parents. They were both Piranha. Oh, nah. They couldn't remember it at first. And I was like, guys, come on. I even know what this film is. Like,
it's the remake of a ripoff.
Exactly.
And here's something else that's interesting. And I've seen some people snark at the 3D, like, oh, this didn't do well. Is this the end of 3D? And I'm like, well, here's where I think the 3D release factors into Piranha's low box office. Because it's such a crowded summer, and this last weekend, five movies. So you had four other movies that were new in the theaters. A lot of theaters, especially in my town, for example, Columbus, which is very, it's Midwest. It's your test market Midwest area. Mm-hmm. They all, the only screens they put it on was a 3D screen. Because they weren't going to run Piranha in five screens. They're like, well, let's throw it in one screen and it's going to be the 3D. And not that people didn't like 3D. It's just I don't think it has anything to do with 3D. I think it has to do with the ticket price. People went and looked at that and said, I'm not paying $13 to go see that.
Nope.
I'd pay $9, but I'm not paying $13.
We were wondering this on the show last night. Were they even showing this in 2D at all, or is it strictly a 3D release?
It was being shown in 2D, depending on your theaters, but like I could not find a 2D showing in Columbus, and I think that was more just because all the other 2D screens were taken up.
Hmm.
Like I said, you had four other films that they were throwing on there.
Yeah.
In addition to the Expendables and the other guys, and everything else that was held over, Eat, Pray, Love, and Inception, and Scott Pilgrim, and Despicable Me, and Dinner for Schmucks, all these other movies that are out there this week. So, like I said, I don't think people stayed away because it was in 3D. I think the higher ticket price maybe turned off some of the audience.
Yeah, I would agree. Absolutely.
So, I think that's actually going to be the big thing. I will say this about the 3D. I thought it was a conversion 3D. It was probably the best conversion 3D I've seen.
That's what I'm hearing, yeah. I heard it was supposed to be pretty darn good.
Yeah, and it's because he shot it knowing it was going to be in 3D, but the logistics were such that he didn't use 3D cameras, but it actually used the effect and used depth. And here's what, this is my prediction on 3D here. I think it's, originally I had said, and I even said this on the Golden Briefcase, couple weeks ago,
yeah.
Or last week, about, because we were talking Piranha.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I think conversion 3D, back then I said, I think conversion 3D is just going to disappear and everyone's just going to start going to 3D. But now I think it's going to be a horse race between how good they can get the conversion 3D versus how accessible and easy to use the equipment's going to be for to shoot in 3D. Because right now, most 3D releases are animated.
Yeah.
And not a whole lot of people are shooting 3D, so the equipment's not there, the cinematographers don't like it, and all that sort of thing. Once that starts trickling into the mainstream and you get more and more rigs built and more people used to shooting 3D, that's going to increase shooting in 3D. But I think conversion, it's sort of like CGI animals. 15 years ago, when you started seeing CGI animals, they looked like shit.
Yeah.
And then over the years, now you can put like a lion in Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. You can put a lion and it looks really real.
Yeah.
Whereas if they would have done that in 95, it would have looked like a Muppet.
It would just be like laughable, yeah. I mean, I would say the only exception, like I think we talked about this on the show too, was you have creatures like in Jurassic Park and whatnot that were not completely CGI, but you started to see some of that good rootage, I guess, of what was to come with CGI yeah. creations. And yeah, yeah. I definitely agree with you on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, and arguably there's only been, I mean, as much as everyone bitches about conversion, there's only been a handful of them. I mean, you had Airbender, and you had Clash of the Titans, and you've had, you know, Kitty Galore and all these kind of things but really there's been, what, about 10 or so that have been converted?
Yeah, I think Alice in Wonderland 2 was also converted, yeah.
Alice in Wonderland was converted, but a lot of it was CGI, too. Yeah. I mean, so it was, and that's actually the reason they did it that mm-hmm. way. I think 5 years from now, conversion 3D is going to look way better.
Oh,
than it
definitely.
Does now. I mean, we're in its infancy, and so I have a feeling it that might become the standard if they can make it look good.
Yeah, it's just like what you're saying. I mean, we've obviously seen such a natural evolution of basically, I mean, look at motion capture, something like Avatar in comparison to Polar Express or something, that one of those yeah. earlier ones. And that was only a couple years apart, but you can just miles of experience and technology knowledge and stuff like that. Just all that has just changed the game. And yeah, the 3D thing, personally, and I voiced this on the show, I don't care too much about the 3D. It doesn't bother me to the point where it ruins this experience, but it is just going to get better, or it's going to go away. I think probably I'd put my money on that it's going to get better. And at that point, like, I like a 3D movie. I saw How to Train Your Dragon in 3D and loved the heck out of it. Thought it was a complete blast. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm with you on that one. I think the post-conversion stuff is going to look pretty darn good, maybe even in the next year or two. I think it's going to be a pretty quick thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think by 2012... we're going to be seeing some really good 3D conversions. To the point that, because here's that most 3D conversions I've seen, like Airbender and stuff, it just looks flat, and they mm-hmm. don't do much with it. But it's almost like it's that afterthought. Whereas this one, I was like, I could tell it was conversion, because you could see the artifacting, the weird ripple around the edges and that sort of thing, and sometimes reflections didn't look right. But I'm like, no, this looks like they shot it for 3D without necessarily, well, and some gimmicky stuff, but not everything.
Sure.
Real quick, what do you think is going to win this weekend? I'm going to say Takers.
Unfortunately, probably Takers. I am again, haven't seen it, but I'm rooting for Last Exorcism. I hope they do get maybe some of that sort of Paranormal Activity style buzz where people do go see it and they like it and it gets a nice word of mouth, you know, spread. Obviously, the weekend's a real short period of time, so that may not, you know, accumulate by Sunday, but I'd be rooting for that one. I think I'm with you, though. Takers is probably going to take it.
I think Takers is going to be good for 25 or between 25 and 30.
I'd say the same amount.
And like maybe 15 for Last Exorcism. I think that would have been a better released in around Halloween.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed.
And now on to our Fat Guy 5. We'll quickly rip through this since we're way over on this segment. In honor of the Last Exorcism, because we don't want to honor Takers at all.
No.
we have the 5 best on-screen devils.
Yeah.
Our five favorite devils in movies or other media. So I'm going to do the first one, which is the most obvious.
Sure.
Of all of them, Reagan from The Exorcist,
mm-hmm.
Because no one brought to life the devil incarnate in a cute little girl like William Peter Blatty did with The Exorcist, and who was it, Mercedes McCambridge, who did the voice?
I believe so. Yeah,
fantastic voice. Yeah. She like smoked all this time before she did it. She's
yep, like, had that voice. No, yeah, definitely in agreement. I haven't seen The Exorcist in many years, but I remember once I did see it after it had been hyped up. Definitely lived up to the hype in terms of the shock factor and the scariness. And anything satanic, if it's done really well, I think is just inherently chilling. Doesn't matter if you're religious or not. It's creepy. It's just creepy stuff. Yeah. And Reagan, without a doubt, one of the best I think we'll ever see in film history. I'm not sure, you know, if that's going to change.
One note on The Exorcist. It is coming back. They're doing a director's cut screenings in theaters, like in AMC theaters at the end of September. Like September 29th or something, and then it comes out on Blu-ray like October 5th.
I might have to check that out. Lately, a lot of theaters have been doing those really great re-releases. Like I know the New Beverly here in LA, it does a lot of. I think they were just doing Back to the Future, I want to say, or somewhere else around here was doing that. But just a really cool idea, showing, you know, prints of movies, especially if they're it's a nice cleaned up print. That'd be something very worth checking out.
Yeah. You can do the next one.
All right, next one I like, even though I don't care for the film that much, I did like his character. That's Peter Stormare from Constantine. Now, Kevin and I were joking before the show about some of the just laughable and groanable dialogue that Keanu Reeves utters. And I think one of our favorites was, you know, I'm Constantine, John Constantine, asshole, when he says that to like a demon, which I think is just hilarious. But anyway, Peter Stormare.
Because that really hurts the demon's feelings.
Demon cowered in fear at that point. No, Peter Stormare plays a very kind of, he's almost just a badass devil character. I mean, there's really not another way to explain it. He's got, you know, Peter Stormare, if you guys don't remember who he is, he plays a lot of Russian characters, and he's one of the two henchmen from Fargo, and he's the Russian inside Armageddon. Just a really great character actor. And he has this white suit on. He's got these tattoos as the devil. So it was more of a, I don't know if that was supposed to be the devil's true form or just his like realized human form. I think it was very cool. He would like breathe smoke sometimes and stuff like that. Just kind of an awesome take on the devil. No matter how crappy the movie is, that's something that I'll always go back and, you know, kind of smile upon.
Yeah, that was probably the best part of the film.
Exactly.
And maybe Keanu. No, not Keanu.
No. Let's get
all right. The next one I want to do is this is for me. This actually, he hasn't been in an actual feature film, but I'm going to say Hot Stuff from the old Harvey comics. Did you ever read these?
I did not. No, I do know what they are. I just have not read them before.
Yeah, it was the people who published Casper and Richie Rich, and they had a little devil named Hot Stuff. And he was literally a little devil with the horns and the tail. I used to love the Hot Stuff comics. I don't know if they still publish them because I don't know if it's been boycotted at all from religious groups. Because I mean, you have little kids reading books about the devil, which
exactly.
But he's a really cute and he's all fiery, you know, and he's got an attitude.
He's got a little diaper, but, also, yeah, he's a little baby.
That's right. Doesn't he have a diaper?
Yeah, he does. I'm looking at a picture of him. Yeah. Yeah. The first issue of the Hot Stuff comic was October of 1957. So this is an oldie for sure.
Yeah. I was reading them in the 70s.
There you go. So it's been around for a while. Yeah.
Let's put it this way. I was reading them closer to its premiere date than from that time to now.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right. I'll do the next one, too.
Go for it.
This was one of mine. Elizabeth Hurley in Bedazzled.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's just hot.
Yeah, sure.
She looked She looked great in that movie. And you know what I liked about it is they gave sort of a whimsical look at her, but at the devil, but it wasn't it wasn't politically correct, which is I love things that are politically incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
But it also was a humorous look at the devil, but not in a goofish sort of way.
Yeah, I would agree.
Maybe I'm thinking too much into it.
No. I only seen the film, I think, once or twice, and I did like her take on the devil, if you will, and it's always interesting, too, when you have a female devil, which, you know, most people obviously will assume that the devil is a male, and so, yeah, it's always kind of interesting when you got another take on it, so.
And and as we all know, that the devil is Rosie O'Donnell.
Yes, no, I'm just kidding. Exactly.
But no, Elizabeth Hurley was definitely a DILF.
Yeah.
A devil, well, you know.
You know who we didn't mention, Kevin, was Satan from South Park, which I think would have been a nice addition to our list here. I just realized that.
Satan, who is totally Saddam Hussein's bitch.
Exactly.
I love it. You know, it's funny. I have a friend who he's been all over the place. He was out and he used to live out in Santa Barbara and then he's in Newton, North Carolina now. He's a mm-hmm. pastor and he was a youth pastor out in Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And I was over visiting him once and we were watching South Park and he's like, this actually has a lot to say about theology. We're watching Saddam Hussein, hey, what's going on?
Exactly. Yeah. You can see it that way. Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. You can do the last one
here. I think is probably one of the more iconic devil characters. And that's Damien from The Omen. Now we are talking about the original Omen, 1976 edition, not that 2007 crap, but, we got
and not Sam Neill from the third movie.
Oh yeah, no. Like no, we're talking Harvey Stevens, little British boy who played Damien inside the original Omen. Another very creepy kid role. I don't know if it's up there with Reagan for me in terms of performance, but in terms of creepiness, this kid's a little devil. Pardon the pun, but he's a creepy little dude.
Do you know that very last shot of The Omen where he's looking over his shoulder,
uh-huh.
and he's just starting to grin?
Yes,
how creepy that is.
Oh, it's so eerie.
Do you know the story behind how that shot was made?
No, I don't. No.
It's directed by Richard Donner.
Yeah.
And he was behind the camera and he told the kid to look around and the kid was just supposed to look around and scowl and look creepy.
Yeah.
But the kid started to get the giggles. and Richard Donner's like looking at him. He's like, don't laugh. Do not laugh. And so the kid's fighting to keep from laughing. And that's what's so funny about it is the kid's ready to bust out laughing, but it just looks so creepy.
Oh, it's chilling, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, too, I love the score for that film by Jerry Goldsmith, and and masterful as always, but definitely, especially if you know what film you're listening to, it's a very masterful, creepy score, especially, tracks like 666. Ooh.
Awesome. Well, we're way over time, so we're going to go to a break, and then we'll come back with our final segment and wrap you up.
Cool. Hey, welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. If you've been, not listening to the show, we just had a very fun discussion about some of our favorite devils from the films and Piranha 3D and then Blue People Having Sex and Avatar. It's been a really fun evening so far. So thank you, Kevin. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Now that if you didn't hear it, or if you want to hear it again, go back and listen to it on the internet. We do not suggest that. It's a bad idea.
No, absolutely not. No, don't even think about doing it.
Anyways, we got to wrap some up. We're coming to the end of the show. So
cool.
So what's next here?
Well, next we have our world famous DVD roundup.
You see how I introduced that? It was it was seamless.
Yeah, it was good. Am I natural at this? I think I might be. I'm feeling good about it.
That's right. Again, Tim, this has been a nonstop cavalcade over the last couple of years of people who are who might edge Neil out of his position. No,
there
just
you
kidding.
Go. Goodbye, Neil.
We'll have Neil back in a couple of weeks after he's settled into the new Rejects HQ.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Very cool.
I'm going to let you start. Go ahead and start with the DVDs. What do you see this week?
A couple DVDs I'm definitely going to be picking up. One of the most beloved TV series to me has been Lost. And I know, Kevin, you're pretty close to the series as well.
Yes.
We actually had Kevin on for our recap on Golden Briefcase. So I think it's episode 12. So check that one out. We actually went through every series of the whole entire season of the series.
It was a long episode.
It was a doozy, man. We were all very tired at the end. But no, the reason that this is on our release list today is season 6 just came out. And that's, of course, the final season of Lost. A lot of people were torn on how the series ended. Personally, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very poetic and beautiful ending to the series. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people were not satisfied, and that's fine. Definitely entitled to opinion on that one. The reason I'm going to be picking this one up, though, is I'm going to grab it on Blu-ray, first of all, because if you haven't seen Lost on Blu-ray, you are seriously missing out.
Oh, yeah.
The entire show was shot on location in Hawaii, and it's just beautiful landscape, and they shoot it all HD. And I'd say season 6 has some of the more epic action set pieces and fights and lots of rain and people in mud and stuff like that. It looks beautiful, and it sounds really great, too. So I'm definitely going to be picking this one up. I mean, what about you, Kevin?
Oh, I love it. I think it's great. It's got some great special features on it, too, including, like, the what happens next kind of thing. And, you know, it will send you back in time. It's amazing. It'll send you back in time into alternate universes and everything. And you come back here and you die.
That's how it goes. So I'm definitely picking this one up.
What else you got this week?
The one other one that actually caught my eye was a film that I've really loved over the years. And it's been a while since I've watched. Cancel that. I watched it recently. Mm-hmm. That's Terry Gilliam's Time Bandits. Now, this is getting a Blu-ray release this week, and it initially I was a little worried because a lot of people were complaining about the quality. Now, this film's coming out on 1080i instead of 1080p for Blu-ray, and for those non-techies of you, that's, you know, considerably less pixels than a 1080p. But, you know, Kevin and I were talking about it, and truthfully, I don't think most moviegoers are going to really notice the difference, especially if you do have a nice TV. You know, you got the good brightness setting and whatnot. I think the film's still going to look pretty darn good. I was looking at some snapshots of it, I think on DVDBeaver.com, and it looks darn good. So I'm going to be picking this up. A very timeless sort of time travel film, if you will. And yeah, sorry, I'm full of them tonight. And and we were talking on my show about this. It's actually there's some really scary stuff in this movie. I mean, do you remember Time Bandits, Kevin?
I saw it when it came out in the theaters. I am that old. And yeah, it freaks you out. Yeah. The ending screwed me up.
I had a friend recently who was telling me the reason he feared it is he was scared of the dwarf characters. And I was like, that's terrible. I can't believe you're saying that.
Doing it.
It's true. I remember I pointed it out to my girlfriend, and she looked to me and she goes, R2-D2 was played by a human? I was like, yes, he was. Yeah, so yeah, like, love Time Bandits. I'll probably be picking this up. It's actually pretty cheap right now, too. I think on $12.99 on Amazon. So it's definitely something I'm going to be grabbing.
That's not bad. The ones I want to point out, obviously, you got Simpsons Season 13, which, again, the Simpsons releases have been great because they've added, even into the 13th season, usually by the time you hit the third or fourth season, they burn out of special features. But this one still has commentaries on all the episodes, behind the scenes stuff, all this extra stuff with Ralph. And it's from like 7 years ago. So, you know, it's a great little thing, and there's more Simpsons to come over the years. You got Survival of the Dead, the George Romero movie, which is, okay, it's better than Diary of the Dead.
That's what I'm hearing, yeah.
Kind of takes a Western angle to it. It's sort of like a retelling of, I forget which Western it is, but it's a retelling of one of the Westerns, classic Westerns. There's Abandon, which is Brittany Murphy's final film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everybody can have The Dark Knight. So it's actually not a bad little sort of direct-to-video thriller about a woman who thinks she's going crazy. Poor Brittany Murphy, she does not look well in this movie. Say what you will. Also $5 a Day, which is stars Christopher Walken. There's a neat little drinking game on Film School Rejects you can check out about that. It's kind of a road movie about Christopher Walken and his son. And then, of course, this is the big one, Tom and Jerry Meet Sherlock Holmes, a brand new Tom and Jerry movie, which I love Tom and Jerry. Huge fan. I watch it with my kids. And The Stinker, the backup plan. Did you see the backup plan?
Purposely skipped it. So
you are.
I think I smelled it. I smelled it from a mile away, and I was like, I can't do this. Not gonna happen.
You are a better person than I am.
Good.
So let's go ahead and wrap up the reviews. We had Avatar: The Big Blue Sex Scene Edition, which I said I'm giving it a suck because, you know, it's, why see it again? You know,
I'm with you on that one. Suck it. Yeah.
And The Last Exorcism, which by principle gets a preemptive suck, even though I really want to see it. And Takers, which completely earned a suck.
And I haven't seen it, nor do I plan to, and I will agree with you.
Okay, good. Next week, we're going to have another guest host. It'll be Frothy Girl. And we'll be talking Machete, Going the Distance and The American. In the meantime, you can catch Tim at the Gold. Give me your quickly.
You can find me at the Golden Briefcase over at firstshowing.net every Tuesday night. And follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/TimBuell.
Awesome. We will talk to you later, folks.